Good morning. The Senate E-12 Budget Division and Policy Committee will come to order. For the record, it's Tuesday, March 23, 2010. We have four bills on the agenda today. We're going to start with Senator Stumpf. You have three proposals, and it'll be your choice. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I think the first one we'll do is the see if I can find it here. Senate File 2375.
Okay, Senate File 2375, Senator Stone.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, there is a handout, I believe, that I'd like to share with you. And this is a request on the part of a school district up in northwestern Minnesota. And a number of years ago, well, 3 years ago, there was a situation. Well, we're very sparse up there to begin with.
For the record, it's the Lancaster.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. Lancaster School District. And it's in Kitson County. And Kitson County is a county that has a very sparse population. Most of it, it actually corners North Dakota and Manitoba. And so on the western boundary of Kitson County, it's all ag land. On the eastern part of Kitson County, it's primarily kind of woods and hayland, grassland. They raise cattle over on that side. And it's a very a relatively poor school district that's on the eastern side of Kitson County on Highway 59. And the western side of Kitson County is very wealthy. Sugar beet land, in terms of the property values. So what happened, Kennedy, which is another town not too far, about 5 miles from Hellock, which is the capital of Kitson County. The Kennedy School District and the Hellock School District were cooperating between the two districts. And then they decided that they would consolidate. And when they consolidated, that through the Lancaster School District, sparsity, elementary sparsity, out the window because the formula, for whatever reason, and I'm sure Mr. Nauman could explain the details of it, it didn't work, and so the Lancaster School District lost. I believe it was about let's see. I forget exactly what the dollar amount was, but they lost their that sparsity, elementary sparsity amount, and so they actually came to us, and we said, well, that didn't seem like it was a very fair deal, where two other districts, when they get together, would impact a third district. And they would end up losing a fairly significant amount of money. And this Lancaster School District, as the article that you have before you indicates, they are a good school. They have a high graduation rate, and they have a high attendance rate, and they do a very, very good job, well-recognized school district. But they're poor, and basically what I'd like to do is to try to figure out a way so that they would continue to get that elementary sparsity, even though when those other two districts triggered that consolidation, impacted them. So what the bill does is it allows, on the set page two, it allows them to maintain that elementary sparsity for basically for 2012 and on. And there is a fiscal note. It does have a fiscal impact. And the fiscal impact is, it had both the aid and levy. The aid side is $59,000, and the levy side is, in 12, it's $35,000. And then, of course, 13, a little different, but fairly close, $64,000 and $36,500. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts of the bill. They, in their narrative, and one of the things that I think their whole school district is right about in the middle of the first page. It talks about the five school bus routes. They put on 450 miles per day, and then if they for whatever reason, you know, the school district, you know, wasn't there, they basically would end up, kids would have to travel 3 hours a day just to go to and from school. So it's a very, very large school district geographically, and there aren't very many people. So I think for that reason, it would be good to be sure to try to help them stay open.
Thank you, Senator Stump. And Senator Stump, do you have any testifiers?
I don't. It's like
quite a distance.
Yeah, about 450 miles from here. So.
Okay, we do have their statement. There are questions of Senator Stump, Senator Hand, followed by Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Stump. Thank you. I just have a couple of questions. I want to understand a little bit more about the school district, and that maybe Mr. Nauman, I don't know if you've got this information, but do we have information about the size of the school district, number of students, how much money is currently in the budget on a per pupil basis? What is their budget per student? I guess I'd also like to know a little bit about the contract settlements that have been recently passed by the school district for the employees. And I guess in reading the history, it talks about this being done as a transition aid initially, and now we're asking the transition to be made permanent. And I'm just wondering if there was any discussion at the time it was passed about why the transition was going to be temporary rather than permanent when it was passed. Was there an expectation that something was going to happen that hasn't happened? But is there information about those things that we can look at before we...
Senator Stump and Council, or Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hand, I think the when they first came to me, when that happened, and they ended up losing their elementary sparsity, we thought that a period of time, you know, we could kind of work that out, and the school district could absorb it. Then I think what happened is Kitson County is a county that's been steadily losing population, and so. I think even though the school district is very sound in terms of its operations and everything, they've been under some financial pressure, not like all districts, obviously, through the you know, what's been happening and everything. So I think they came to me last summer and asked if there'd be a way to maintain their existing budget, and I said, "Well, I would try." And I realized that that area up there is relatively in a poor property wealth district, but they have passed several referendums, like a number of districts in Greater Minnesota. They have done a pretty good job. I think their operating referendum is like $1,700 per pupil. The trouble with a lot of those districts is because they're relatively small, and I don't have the exact number of pupils for that district, but I'm guessing that it's probably about maybe 250 or
Mr. Chair, I didn't bring the pupil counts with me, Senator Hamm, but I backed into them, and I'm approximating about 198 units based on the fiscal data that we have off the fiscal note. And based on the information that the district is providing, they say that the transition aid that they received in the past that constituted about 4% of their general fund operating budget, that would suggest about a $2.5 million total budget. And that's what I have readily assumable. I can certainly get more detailed information.
And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Nauman, if I could get out my calculator, I guess, but on a per pupil basis, what is the dollars in the budget? How many dollars per pupil is being spent currently?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, I'd feel more comfortable with the opportunity to get back to you, but if it were 2.5 and about 200 or 198 units, $12,500 per kid. But again, that's real rough, and I want to get back to you. And that it's not out of line, given that this has been a sparsity district in the past. You would expect that number to be somewhat higher than other districts. And I was drafting an amendment earlier when some of this conversation proceeded, but the circumstance here was that the school district made what I think many would assume to be a logical choice. Their expenses exceeded their revenues, and they chose to close a building. And in that process, by definition of how the sparsity formula works, they became less sparse because they moved the elementary school kids to another school. And in that process, the calculation recognized the distance from that school to the next nearest elementary school to be less than it was before. And they actually ended up losing additional money by reducing their expenses in the process.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
And Mr. Nauman, I'd appreciate that, but and I think those are important things for us to know as we make this decision about the bill. But I'd also be curious to know, given the things that have been in the news recently about contract settlements, since most of any school district's budget is tied up in contract settlements, it would be good to know, since the time of the transition, what has been the history of the contracts. If the contracts have been settled at a pace that have been unsustainable, are we just being asked to bring the state money to pay for local contracts that have been settled beyond the capacity of the local district to pay them? And I think that'd be good to know. Not that that would mean that we wouldn't go ahead and pass the bill, but I think we should understand what the circumstances are. To me, it's troubling to say, well, we had this situation. People knew it was going to happen. There was some transition money put in place, and now we want to make that transition money permanent. And the argument seems to be, well, things sort of just happened, but I don't think they just happened. I think somebody made decisions about things, and I'd like to know more about that before we decide on
it. Senator Hand, we'll see that information is provided you, as well as myself and several others, used to serve on school boards. This information, as you know, is reported to the Minnesota School Boards Association. We'll ask them and others that have such data to make that available for whatever districts that you would like and further refine the responses that you've had so far. Senator Olson, followed by Senator Saltzman.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is I only just wanted to affirm, in case you didn't believe Senator Stumpf, that area is sparse. A few years ago, I was up there for a Native Prairie seminar that was North Dakota, Manitoba, and Minnesota. And that's the far reaches. It wasn't very far from, and we were at Lancaster, and ate in one of the restaurants there. And there's not very many people around, so it is a different part of the world up there. And I understand the sparsity and the challenge of meeting needs like this and accommodating, and yet wanting to maintain a school presence in the area.
Mr. Chairman, Lancaster has had a long history of administrative cooperation, and for I bet close to 15 years they've had like one superintendent that has worked with three different school districts, and so they've had a fairly good track record of trying to keep the administrative costs contained, and obviously I think that's true with a lot of rural districts that when things have been tight they've adjusted for it. So anyway, I would.
We have a couple of other questions, but a further response to Senator Olson.
No, I was just going to say I would also get a hold of that contract settlement agreement that for the information for Senator Hand.
Okay. Senator Saltzman, followed by Senator Bonner.
Right. On that same point, Mr. Chair and Senator Smith, I just want to thank you for representing your district so well, because I think those of us who live in the metropolitan area sometimes don't have the sense that you do of the struggles of our greater Minnesota schools. So I think that's important. But I also think that if we're going to start using contract settlements to determine if we pass these, I think we should do that across the board, because we've had a number of legislators come and, you know, present to us on a variety of issues. And it all has to do with cash flow. It all has to do with other sources of revenue. So I think if we're going to do that, we need to do it for all the bills, you know, and if that's going to be something that, like, we consider. But at this point, I don't think it has been brought up. I think it is a concern in this economic climate. But I do support this, because I think that in the long term, we need to look at probably a different kind of formula that's based on some of the challenges of our school district. But for now, this is what we have, and I think it's important that we consider what all of our schools are struggling with.
Okay. That's noted. And Senator Hand, you have been consistent in noting this on earlier bills, I guess, for the record.
I would just want to point out, I would certainly agree with Senator Saltzman. I think we should consider it. And I think that it's difficult. I don't know, 12,000, if that's the number, per student is a lot of money. It's more than most school districts get. And I understand that there are constraints when you have a small-sized school district, and there may be some differences there, but there's probably transportation sparsity money going into the district and other parts of the formula that a lot of other school districts don't get as well. And so if we boil it down to a cost per student and you look at the dollars, 85 or whatever percent goes to settle contracts, those kinds of things to me are important to know if we're going to be coming and saying, well, look, the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota ought to take as a transition to dollars and make them permanent. Based on what? Well, there's a need. Well, what drives that need? And who made those decisions? Was it the local board that made the decision? I don't know what kind of contracts they've settled. They've been flat. Have they been 6%, 8%? We should know that.
Mr. Chairman?
Excuse me. The local school board makes the decision on the contract ratification.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I understand that, but if they make a decision that they can't pay and then come to us and say, bring the money, there's a problem with that, in my opinion.
It's on the record. From Senator Hand. Senator Bonhoff is next, and then we'll get to Senator Olson with Mr. Nauman following.
Mr. Chair, going back to this particular school district, I'm impressed with the graduation rate. I'm impressed with that they make AYP in both their elementary and high school. I'm impressed with their attendance rate, their awards. And so they've obviously have a model that's working. I think we know that there are problems with small schools and that our formula isn't a one-size-fits-all, that there are fixed costs. And when you have a school district with so few students, how the heck are you supposed to fund it? And so I'm not surprised that the 12.5 is the number, because I remember when I was working on the shared services project last year, the very smallest schools and the very biggest were the least efficient, and that's just the nature of the beast. And so one of the things that I'm interested in is how we can leverage technology to take out some of the costs of these, both, you know, particularly with the small schools. And I'm not for closing these small schools. I think they are so important to a community, and they're changing lives, and they're part of what shapes Minnesota, and they're part of the engine for small business and for economic growth all over the state. But I do wonder about technology. What do they have? What's their broadband capability? Do you see, and not having to do with this bill, but Senator Stumpf, do you see a way going forward that they might take advantage of online learning in a different way, or that there might be a way to leverage technology to reduce costs?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonhoff, the next bill on the agenda talks about the online learning up in our area, and actually it's something that I think really addresses a big need. We have a number of programs in the state that I think fit or fill different needs in different places. And I'm hoping that we do have some people up here to testify and speak to this online learning. But we also have the other programs, PSEO and college in the classroom, and so. I think a real problem. The bills that I have this morning, some deal with the career and technical side of it, and try to enhance some of the money that goes into that program and online learning, which for a lot of years I thought online learning would be the be-all and end-all, you know, for solving some of the distance problems. But we found out that there's a lot of difficulty in having a good online learning program. And you can have, I think, problems with are the students really learning? Are they actually getting challenged through the online courses? Or are they just, you know, is it just a money-making thing for particular company or whatever? So I think we need to keep pursuing that. I think technology helps in a lot of different ways. But in the end, I think it's the quality of those programs that really matters, and not only just the quality, but you got to have the availability. Such as President Obama is talking about filling a void right now, and that deals with career training, and I think that's a void that this committee is going to have to address because. There's a lot of students that need those kinds of programs, not just the science and algebra let's say the traditional academic programs. They need that broader range. Many students like to learn with their hands and learn by doing. So we tend to forget about that, and I think sometimes that kind of narrows our educational opportunities. So for small schools, we have even a bigger challenge in that many of them don't have the opportunities like the larger schools do, you know, the capacity. And I think we've heard that in testimony, the programs that are available, because like up here, you know, they just can't have extra teachers, you know, that would teach, you know, some of the programs that would be nice. You know, they're probably picking and choosing, you know, who they have as teachers, and then they'll, you know, provide those programs. So I think it'll be interesting to listen to the online program or the online testimony. And how we might be able to enhance the career and technical, because I think those are three areas that we need to somehow address.
Okay, the record will note we have a quorum, and excellent foundation is being laid for your two bills that will come soon. We have some additional comments, and I think we're ready to vote, keeping in mind that the online reference and technical will be further addressed in the upcoming bill. Senator Olson, followed by Senator Saxok.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to just follow up on Senator Hand's request. I really do think that it would be helpful to us to see and get a feel for the range of settlements, because I think it would surprise us. It's going to be all over the board. I had a chance to meet, as you have, Senator Stumpf, with a couple groups of superintendents from small districts in greater Minnesota, and there were some that really held the line. And I think in small districts where everybody knows what's going on and major increases for some of the most well-paid people in that area, would not sit very well if it doesn't match the economy around there. So I think it would be helpful to us to have a review of that kind of thing, because I don't think we should jump to conclusions on what is going on out there.
Thank you, Senator Olson. That's noted for the record. And Senator Fulby, who previously served on the State School Boards Association as a school board member for representing her region, we mentioned earlier that the district settlements are reported to MSBA, and Mr. Nauman, in fact, has just asked a rep from MSBA if that could be shared consistent with the questions that have been raised. So, again, that's noted for the record. Senator Saxhog, and then we're ready to vote.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to note that along with what Senator Boniface was talking about, that broadband certainly is important to rural Minnesota, not only for education but for job creation, too. And that, not surprisingly, the Blanton Foundation is doing work in that particular area, too, and are in line now for some large federal grants. So it is important to rural Minnesota.
Thank you, Senator Saxhog, and I believe we're ready to entertain a motion, Senator Stumpf, for Senate File 2375, addressing the transitional challenges and the formula for Lancaster Public Schools. Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'd move that Senate File 2375 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus education bill.
On that motion, any further discussion? And I should ask, is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on this matter? We asked earlier, but in case someone arrived that did want to weigh in, there being none, Senator Stumpf renews his motion. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Stumpf. And your next bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to invite up our testifiers. Let's see, where are they?
And Senator Stumpf, would this be Senate File 3064?
Mr. Chairman and members, yes, Senate File 3064.
Online education. Can we invite your testifiers to join you at the table and ask the testifiers to please state their name for the record?
Mr. Chairman, a few years ago, we had a relatively small grant that related to a program up in northwestern Minnesota on developing online learning. And I just wanted to get the update on it, and I happened to be visiting over there and found out the details on how well that program has been going and what they had done with the grant that they got. And since I've had a fascination with online learning for quite a number of years, I thought, well, when I saw what they were doing and the results of what they did, this is really amazing. And if this could be increased across the state, in particular in rural areas, but I think across the state in general, it would be a big help to lower costs, increase the quality of the programs, and add to a kind of enhance the options that we have for our education system. So I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Murray Turner, who has the kind of developer of this in our area, and find out a little more about what's it all about.
Hey. Welcome, Mr. Turner.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting us to testify. I appreciate that. I came up with this idea in about 2002 and got thinking about it, and then started in 2003 working with the colleges on it. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the background of it, and then we brought along two students that have been part of the online process. One is currently taking classes, and the other student has taken classes and now has moved on to college. So I'll give you the background, then I'm going to let my two students carry the ball on how well this program is working. You should have received a handout. I'm not going to insult you by reading through the handout, but the second page in our five-year progress here shows we started in 2005. We started with a couple of classes and had 70 students. And in 2009, 2010 now, we have 39 districts involved. We offer 14 classes a semester, and we're running about 480 students per year through this online program. Okay, and then the last is our budget for the next couple of years, not only to sustain but to grow this program. We really think, and it's really starting to take off. If you look at the graph, it's escalating quickly, and we think in the next couple of years our goal is to have 1,000 students per year going through this. So with that, just give you a little bit of background on how it got started. I thought about in our small schools, and I'm from Senator Stump's district. I just drove 340 miles. Lancaster, where I hunt deer, is another 85 miles north of me yet, to give you an idea of the sparsity where we live. And I work, I should introduce mine, I'm director of the Pine to Prairie Cooperative Center, and I work for 29 districts up in the very northwest corner of the state. I pretty well cover the northwest corner. I'm the vocational director. I'm the online learning coordinator. We share programs between school districts. I coordinate those shared programs. And as my superintendents that I work with, any other duties as assigned. You've probably heard that before. So right now we're struggling. We're losing our Spanish teachers. And we have about 8 districts that need Spanish for 2 hours a day. We're working at developing an online high school Spanish program up there. So that's one of the things, and I've got 6 qualified candidates that are interested in doing this online learning. So we try addressing some of the questions that Senator Stumpf had earlier. We're trying the best we can in our small districts up there to do the best we can with the dollars that we have. But going back to our online learning program, in 2003, then, I met with the college presidents at Northland Community College and at Minnesota State, and I talked about this program where they would offer college courses to our students online during the day. Okay. The college presidents that I talked to were very excited about it, and they assigned the project to the deans. Judy Anderson is here with me. She's from Alexandria Tech. They saw the possibilities of this and got on board right away, too. So we started immediately working with 3 colleges, and then Jill Abbott from Minnesota State and Kent Hansen from Northland. And in 2004, we just spent time thinking about this project, developing policies, procedures, rules. When we implemented this in 2005, we wanted it to work, and we wanted it to be successful. And so we spent a whole year doing it. And so we started in 2005 in the fall. We started with 2 classes, and we had 35 students in the spring.
Excuse me, Mr. Turner, you're referring to Minnesota State Moorhead or Minnesota State?
Minnesota State and Community College. It's Detroit Lakes. It's the 2-year colleges, Detroit Lakes, Wadena, Fergus Falls is the main campus, and then Moorhead Technical College as well. So it's 4 Minnesota State Community and Technical Colleges, 4 campuses.
You're collaborating with all the area.
All of those, right, and Alexandria Tech, and Northland Community and Technical Colleges, Thief River, and East Grand Forks. So really we're working with a lot of campuses.
Thank you.
Okay. And so we started with 2 classes, 35 students. The next semester, 2 classes and 35 students, and then it started to grow from there. And it has been very successful. I am so proud of the students that have enrolled in this program. We have, if you read through here, we have right around 90% completion rate. Students that enroll in this online program receive college credit, and 90% of them complete it with an A, B, or a C. And I am so proud of that. If you followed online learning, you'll see that about, you know, college students that take online learning, the average is closer to 65% that pass these courses. So I am so proud of it. But 2 things that we did I think are critical for the success of this. One is when a school signs on to be part of our online college in the high school, They student has to take the class during a scheduled period during the day, and it's flexible. It's not like ITV where you have to be there second period. They can take it any period of the day, periods 1 through 8. We have climax. They have a period 0. Students come in and take college algebra 7:30 to 8:30 in the morning. But they work on the college class every day. Okay, and I think that's a key. Now, that isn't enough. They do it, and the students may testify to this, that they have to do a lot of additional work, but at least we know they're working on it every day. The second thing that a school agrees to when they come on board with us is they assign a proctor or a mentor to these students. It's not necessarily a teacher in the subject area, but it's just somebody that checks in every day, checks with them. Yes, they're working on it. And then we have progress reports that the instructors from the college send every 2 weeks, letting us know that the students are up to speed. If they're not, the proctor talks to the principal, and we talk to the student, get them back up to speed on the coursework. So I think those two, what we call safety, the safety net, has really helped, and that's why we have a 90% completion rate. So the program has worked just fabulous. You can look at, we offer both career and technical courses. We do not have a lot of health occupations programs up in our 29 schools. So we offer medical terminology. We offer anatomy and physiology. We're developing an intro to health careers class. We offer liberal arts courses as well, like world history, the sciences, psychology, and those types of courses for those students that want to go on to a four-year degree. So we are now offering 14 courses per semester that students can choose from. So it has worked very well. What I think I'll do now is I'll turn it over to our students and have them talk about the program a little bit, and then we can come back if you have any questions of any of us. And Judy Anderson is here from Alex Tech, too, from the college perspective. So if you have any questions, you can ask them after we hear from our two students.
Thank you, Mr. Turner, and welcome to the students.
Thank you. I'm Jill Lundeen. Good morning, everybody. I'm a senior at Evansville High School, and I don't know if any of you know where Evansville is. Do you? Okay. It's by Alexandria.
Don't.
It's really little. In our graduating class, we only have 11 students, just if that helps to tell you how small we are. And so even though we're such a little school, it doesn't mean that we don't have options. So that's really great. That's a great thing about the online learning is that from the classes that we take at our high school, we can also take these online classes and add, and we can choose to do that instead of going straight to the college and be PSEO. We can be involved in our community, which is a really big deal in our little communities. Over the past 2 years, I've taken 5 different courses, so 15 credits of online college learning. And like Mary said, it's not easy. Some of them are really, really hard courses. Developmental psychology was a lot of work. And Amber took it this year, too. It's a lot of work. But it's something that you've learned so many different skills from it. And you don't have a teacher over your shoulder telling you to get it done and when to hand it in, where it really teaches you a lot of responsibility in that. Yep, it helps you prepare for your future from it. It's a great thing.
Yeah, I could still
thank
be
you,
in
Ms. Lundy.
Thanks.
Be a kid, yeah. And Ms. Okay. Halstead, please state your name for the record.
Okay, I am Amber, and I'm also a student attending Evansville High School. It's given me the opportunity to stay in school but still have the safety network as a high school student would and, like, explore options beyond just what's offered at our school. And last year I knew going into my senior year that I'd want to get ahead in my college pursuit but remain a kid at the same time. It's helped me be in sports like basketball and cheerleading and stay in extracurriculars, so that's really nice. I don't know. It's really great.
Mm-hmm. And it helps you prepare for the future where next year I'm planning on going to University of Minnesota Duluth, so that's not a small school at all. So it's really nice to take these classes so that we're even farther ahead. And it also helps us save money. 15 credits entering into college, that's saving almost $3,000. Yes. So that's a great deal too. Any questions?
Thank you for your testimony. We do have some questions. Senator Saltzman, followed by Senator Scobin.
Thank you.
there. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And students, it is wonderful to have you here. It reminds us of why we're all at the table today. And my guess is that you don't have advanced placement classes at your school. And so for a lot of students that are in larger schools, they have access to that and are also able to get credits, which perhaps people at this table, their own children have been able to take advantage of. So I think this is a really neat way for you to be able to access college credits. And, you know, you may find that it's a way for you to get ahead. It's also a way that when you get to college, then if you have some of those courses out of the way, you can take courses, electives, that otherwise you wouldn't have been able to take. And that's what my daughter has been able to do at the U of M. So that's really great. It may not accelerate her because of the program she's in, but she can take courses now that she wouldn't have been able to take because she has those cores out of the way. So I just, you know, commend you for your ambition. And so you both plan to go to U of M next year, Duluth? Or?
No, I'm planning on going to Bemidji State.
Fabulous. So. Well, like, you know, congratulations. And don't have senioritis, too bad. It's too much. So I can tell you won't. You're very ambitious young women. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Lundeen, could you just explain a little bit how you where these classes fit into your high school schedule and the type of rigor that you have seen these classes create in your life? I mean, how much work is involved in participating?
Well, we have a planned study. Oh, sorry. We have a planned study hour every day. So last year, we had 75-minute blocks in our schedules. So we would have 75 minutes every day to work on it. So that was really nice, where we would have 75 minutes every day. And I would usually end up spending another probably 20 minutes every day on the work. We wrote a lot of papers last year, especially in developmental psychology. And a lot of reading also. So it was mostly reading and working. This year we switched and we have 45-minute periods now. And so we have 45 minutes. And so I usually spend a half an hour after school doing the work after school also. Does that answer your question?
Sure. Mr. Chair, if I could follow up on a couple things. And maybe Ms. Alstead to have you participate in the conversation. When you get stuck, what are your options? I mean, there's going to be times when you can't get to the end result. How does that process work?
You can email the teacher, and they usually email you back right away. They're very good with that. So, and any questions, and then our mentor at school, she's always willing to help and stuff.
And then, thank you. And Senator Stump, did you say that this started as a pilot project, and what kind of appropriation did the state plug some money in to get things started?
50. Yes, I had approached Senator
Mr.
Stumpf.
Turner.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. I had approached Senator Stumpf, and they had appropriated $50,000 to get this project started when we had two schools involved.
That was in 2006, and then we have the chart showing the growth. Senator Rummel, followed by Senator Roebling and Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and a couple of related questions. The first one to Ms. Lundeen or Ms. Alstead. Could you describe the relationship you have with the teacher who's conducting the course, not your mentor in the high school, but the teacher who's – what's that like? How does that relationship develop?
Well, in the beginning of the class, we usually have, like, introductions. And so she introduces herself, and, like, we usually get to know a lot about the person, and then we introduce ourselves just through, like, an online thread. And then we can always email, like, whenever we need help with anything. So that's really great.
And, Mr. Chair, this would be for Mr. Turner. What is the tuition that the school pays so that the students can take this course? Is there a fee?
Yes, there is.
Mr. Turner.
What we do is we take a look college, it costs about roughly, it varies year to year, but roughly ballpark, it's $425 per student for a 3-credit class. So what we do is if we're offering 14 classes and each 3-credit class is roughly about $8,000, we take that total divided by the number of students enrolled, and that's how we come up with a per student price, and then that is billed to the schools.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this, maybe the students could answer this since they're in the classroom. When you're working on your daily assignment, are you in a computer lab that students could be taking a variety of different courses all at the same time?
Yes. Yes. There's people working on speech as well as social problems as well as psychology all in our computer lab together. And so that's also a really nice, even though it's online, if there's more than one student taking it in the high school, you can work with each other on the different programs or the different assignments so that you can help learning or help teach each other about it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
And I was wondering, because so many universities and colleges are now offering online courses, and this would be probably for Mr. Turner, would it be possible for you not have to develop your own courses, but have the students enroll in any of those? I mean, Bemidji State, Minsky offers a variety through a variety of different institutions, and I'm just wondering if you could really expand your horizons and still kind of keep a supervised program going for high school students by allowing them to enroll in online courses throughout the state.
Mr. Turner.
One of the things we did back in 2004 when talking to the presidents and the deans, we worked out a contract for these courses. You know, we're charged about $425. If you look at online courses across the state, they would be about double that price. So this is a huge advantage for our schools and for our students to work with this. The other thing is, because of this program, we work with the schools and they sign a contract with us that they will do these things, that they'll provide the mentor, provide the safety net. I'm concerned if it's just opened up. You know, students can take any course, anytime, independent study, you know, that we're not going to have the success rate that we have, which is just 90% is unbelievable.
Senator Roebling.
Through the college and the schools appropriation that the state has, originally it was supposed to mean $150 per pupil, but we have that as a capped appropriation, so it's my understanding that that isn't happening, that you don't always get the 150 if there's too many students across the state enrolled in college and the school courses. Do you know what level of funding you're receiving now through that?
Mr. Turner?
Yes, I do. It and I'm going to give you a round figure, but it's really close. It's around $50. Yes. Wow. Per student is what it came to, because there's, you know, I don't know what the number is, but it's on 19,000 students taking PSEO classes, so it's capped at about 2.2 million. I don't see Eric here. He would know the exact amount, but it's capped at about 2.2 million, and it amounts to about $50 per student that we get for that.
We have at least four additional questions from senators. I wanted to note for the record that we'll be able to have this room till 11 when higher ed will be here, which would include four of us, but if you have another meeting at 10, make sure I know if there's a particular point that you want to have on the record. Senator Hahn.
That's right.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Turner, do you know if you're also getting money through the online learning formula that we have as part of our funding system?
Mr. Turner.
Well, I'm not sure that online learning, I think that's what we were just addressing.
Mr. Turner, in the regular formula, we have an amount that school districts get as part of the formula, and it's multiplied how many students are using online. There's a multiplier with the regular formula. So I'm just wondering if that's how the school districts perhaps are offsetting what they pay you, is what I'm guessing.
Mr. Turner.
I can't answer that. I'm not aware of that formula other than the $51 per pupil we were getting for online learning.
And Mr. Chair.
Sandbrock.
Mr. Turner, how are you currently being funded now? Are you just completely funded through this reimbursement by the school districts that participate? You get other funding outside of that?
We have received other funding. We'd received earlier from the department here $50,000. Then we were lucky enough, we'd also received an Office of Higher Education grant where we received $200,000 a year for the last 2 years. That funding is now ending. And so we want to continue to grow this, not sustain it. We want to continue to grow it so it's available to all schools across the state. We've also taken on two more colleges. Lake Superior College is interested in joining us. Northwest Tech out of Bemidji. And the U of M is going to be offering some courses through this process. So we want to grow this as much as possible. And that Office of Higher Ed grant funding is ending this current year. And so we're looking for additional funding to keep it growing.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Senator Turner, Burnout. So is this for a particular amount of time that you're asking for this, or is it a one-time appropriation for the next 2 years? Or?
Mr. Turner.
Yes, it's a one-time appropriation.
Thank you. And then also I just wanted to thank you, students, who did an outstanding job, and thank you for coming down today.
Thanks. We have Senators Cope, Dahl, Olson, and Torres Ray in that order. Senator Cope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the students. I am currently online for my MBA. And so I very much like the flexibility of the program. I have to be honest with you. When I originally started online, I thought it was going to be maybe an easier way, and I found I was dead wrong. In fact, it's more difficult than when I was going for my undergraduate. So, you know, congratulations on your work, and really 90% is outstanding in that because I see the students in my current classrooms dropping off. And
right.
Yeah, so that's very impressive. My question to you is when I'm online in my course room, in addition to assignments and papers and quizzes that I take, I also have to partake in discussions with other students. And is mm-hmm. that a part of the course as well?
Yes.
Weekly discussions where you respond back and forth?
Yes.
Okay, and so how many students are generally in the classes with you, and are they primarily you know, how does that work? How do the groups get formed?
Ms. Lindeen.
We have discussion boards, and so every week we have different prompts that we discuss, and we have to respond 3 times with 150-word posts, and then plus your original discussion. So it's kind of a continual discussion that, and you can read everyone else's postings. It's not really like a chat room at all. It's on there, and you can read everyone's prompts and posts together. Do you have anything to add?
And there's around like 20 kids in every class, usually not a whole lot more than that.
Thank you. If I could address that, we follow Mr. the college Chairman. Guidelines. So depending on the course, there would some courses there's 20 capped, some 25, and some 30. So we follow the college guidelines on that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Turner, what do you see as some of the limitations as to what you might be able to offer? Or are you frustrated with the kind of courses you might be able to prepare? For example, intro to public speaking. Tell me how you kind of work around, obviously a live audience is different than, or do you use a live audience? Just talk about some of the limitations about the courses you might want to offer.
I'll talk about the speech is really interesting because when they said let's offer introduction to speech, I thought, you know, how are we going to do this? Have either of you taken the speech?
Oh,
they've both, so they can probably address it better than I can, but they do talk to a live audience. Do you want to address that?
Okay, so in speech, we also do like the discussion threads, but then we have to do speeches, so then we have to prepare our outline, and then we get cameras. Every student in the class gets a camera. And then we give it in front of a class, and then we send it in. We have to scan the classroom, and then they record us giving the speech. And so it is a live audience. So.
Yep. And every audience has anywhere from 10 to 15 people. So you're in a room with people, and it's a real speech. Yeah.
And just as a follow-up, I've heard that physical education is offered online. tell us, is that available on your program?
That is not, part of our course offerings.
Directly monitor. Any follow-up, Senator Dahl?
And just keep driver ed offline, too, if you would.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I was listening to some of the dialogue about where the money is coming from, I'm reminded that we have, I think we have some coordination challenges. Because Senator Obing brought up college in the schools, which is one concept and program we talk about. And I heard the gentleman's response about talking about post-secondary enrollment options, the online learning, and, you know, which is the source of resources. Some of it's coming through higher ed. At some point, I think we probably do need to get a handle on some of the, whether it's a hybrid, you know, each there's new approaches that are coming into play, and I think we should be flexible enough to be able to respond and not limit the innovation and the opportunity that's there, and yet because we get stuck in our little boxes, where I think we're aiming at the choices and being able to, you know, advance learning in different settings, somehow I think we've got to start pulling some of that together, particularly as it pertains to programs like this. I think it's very exciting what you're doing.
Thank you, Senator Olson.
One of my principals, just talking about this, one of my principals asked when I was going to retire, and I go, "How come?" Says, "What are you going to dream up next?" So, and that's where we're working on this online Spanish class now. So we have to keep being innovative in our rural areas. It's to keep going.
It's wonderful.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stumpf, I was going to really build on what Senator Roblin just said and Senator Olson with respect to coordination.
Senator, a little closer to the micro.
I guess I have to move this way. Senator, I really love this, and I think we need to put more money into this. Very definitely, I want to support that. Part of what I think, though, we need to do is review the different source of funding that exists today and the different programming. What Senator Olson was talking about is something that I believe that we need to do, because we do have these sources of funding that exist out of higher education and K-12. And then we have advanced placement, and we have concurrent enrollment. All of these programs aiming at providing students with these opportunities to get college credits. I think this is a form of doing that, but it's the same. The concept is ultimately the same, which is providing students the opportunity to get credits. This is growing really fast, and as parents and students realize how much money they can save and getting credits, college credits, this is only going to grow. And I am delighted to hear that these opportunities of online college will open access in Greater Minnesota, because that was a problem, I think, that we are facing right now. So I wonder if you see this as an opportunity for us in our committee to perhaps have a subcommittee that will review this and come up with recommendations to look at all of these sources of funding that are in place right now. What are the opportunities to expand, consolidate, coordinate, work with higher education to get some of these? In my view, all of these needs to be expanded, and the question will be, how do we do it?
Senator Stump, do you have an answer?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Torres Ray, as I mentioned earlier when Senator Bonhoeff asked a question, I think this is one piece of a kind of a bigger picture, and as the students mentioned, they don't have access to AP or IB, and they more than likely, and I don't think, have access to PSEO, because usually those programs work well for if you have a college in your town, you know, if you don't have to travel too far. I think what I was fascinated in how well this program works was, first of all, the quality of the program, you know, that it wasn't just a college course that was put online that a student could access, because I think there needs to be some I don't want to say monitoring, but some supervision. And even I taught a number of college courses online, And it's difficult. I was not a product of all the technology, and so I learned how to use the TV and stuff, but it wasn't natural. And I saw that in a lot of the other profs, too. It was the exceptional college prof that actually took on the challenge of developing an online course. And I don't know, there was probably maybe a handful at that time. So what fascinated me was the quality of the project, or the course, and the rigor. The fact that these, it wasn't just something that you could take and spend a half or 20 minutes and then you could get your college credit. I think that makes what's happening kind of special. And if they can continue to keep that quality and rigor and expand, and I'm not sure if it's the supervisor that's doing it, but I don't think so. I think it's the school districts that are participating. You've set out the guidelines, and they have to buy into those guidelines. And I think by doing that, everybody has a stake in the game. And the students have a stake in the game, too, because they know that up front that it's not going to be, you know, just a dance in the park and they'll get their college credits. You're going to have to work hard for them.
Yes.
And I think that makes the quality special. The other thing that really fascinated me is that we have a shortage or a lack of quality career and technical programs. And most of our districts in greater Minnesota, and you've been there long enough, Mr. Turner, to see that happening. I've seen it happening where we've had school districts had programs. They're washed out. We had cooperatives that had programs. They're pretty much gone. So we needed to figure out a way, how could we bring some of these career and technical programs back into our schools? And this was the first successful way to really reestablish some of those career and technical programs. And I shouldn't say this was the first, because you actually had a successful undertaking with a number of districts up there before. But this has got the potential to expand much, much more readily. And I guess the question I would have for Mr. Turner is, what would you see as your vision of expansion, let's say, in the next couple of years?
Mr. Turner.
One of the things we're doing already, and we see that demand for more of the career and technical courses that just aren't available in our small schools for next fall, and I should have brought a list of the classes, but we're offering HTML, hypertext markup language. We're offering CAD, computer-aided drafting, and a lot of our career and technical courses, they're very difficult to teach online. They're hands-on courses. But the ones like medical terminology and those, you know, anything that we can teach online, we are really looking at, the schools are asking that we offer those types of classes online. So I can see in the next 2 years, and I can just see it next year, that we are expanding we're trying to teach half career and technical courses and half what we call Minnesota Transfer Curriculum courses.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to do a follow-up question. Senator Stumpf, I completely agree about all the things you've said, and I think we must do this. So my question is not so much about continuing to support this and making sure that it survives and thrives. I think that needs to happen. My question is, and you just alluded to it, I believe that a lot of the things that we do in education that are good do not survive and thrive. It's because we pour money into it without thinking about how they work structurally. And so my question with respect to college credits is not about, you know, figuring out how do we get money into a program that no works for rural Minnesota, how do we put a little bit of money for those that work for urban, but looking at structurally, how do we expand opportunities for students who really want to pursue either college, technical college, advanced education, and really have it as part of our K-12 structure so that we offer opportunities for college credits. And so that is changing structure. That's not just putting money into a program that we know today is working under the circumstances. We don't know about the tomorrow, and that's why I believe that some of these programs actually disappear. And having it structure within the current K-12 structure gives us this opportunity to go back and say, okay, how are we doing with the students? How is this expanding? How much money do we need to put into that? Because it's actually working for a large group of students, for, you know, very broad communities that is not just urban or suburban or rural. It's all of them. And really, you know, these numbers are quite compelling in my view. I mean, going from, you know, quite a few students to hundreds of students, it's a compelling evidence that we need to put more money into this. And so I think that we do need to do this as part of the structural change that we need in education, not just putting money into a program that we know is working today.
Well, Senator Stumpf?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Treasury, in visiting with different groups of superintendents over the last number of weeks, one of the things that they asked for was, or a difficulty they laid out was that in smaller schools, we don't, the capacity isn't there the resources aren't there to offer programs that are not fully, fully funded in terms of a full class. They're saying, well, we have, if we could have a variance, you know, they ask for variances on some of their contracts, because they have, let's say, an hour or two, and they can't afford to hire a teacher for that, because that it's just too expensive to hire a teacher for, let's say, an hour or two a day. This fits into that, where take advantage of that hour in the school district, so you got a classroom, you got a computer room, and then they can offer that program. Now, if Spanish works out, and it sounds like that's an area that number of districts are saying that that's a need, that will actually complement the program in that school district. And I think it also addresses another need, where we used to have kind of like the higher performing students, the students that really wanted to excel. Those programs have kind of disappeared too. And I think if you have a rigor, and I think this program demonstrates that you can have an online rigor in those courses, that does challenge these students. And I think that's important as well, is because we don't have the resources to have many school districts don't have the resources to have special programs for, you know, the very high-end students in terms of learning. But I think this program allows for that.
Thank you, Senator Stumpf. And clearly it's an ongoing challenge and opportunity by getting the results from pilot programs, putting seed corn money into need areas, and when we get successful results, that's what we build on. And I guess that's how you put it into the regular program expectations, and clearly that's the wave of the future. I believe there's a representative from Alexandria Technical College, and we appreciate your visit. If you'd like to offer something for the record, please do at this point. And just a heads up for the students, we thank them, but I'm going to ask in a little bit what you're thinking for your major in college and what your first career might ultimately be. So we'll give you a couple minutes to think about that. Then we'll be ready to vote. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Well, first I have to apologize because I have kind of a case of laryngitis, so I'll do my best and hopefully you can hear me. My name is Judy Anderson. I am Director of Transition Enrollment Services at Alexandria Technical College, and then I also have an administrative role of which I work with this program. Just a couple of things that I thought of as I was listening to all the discussion. This program really has been a win-win for the high schools and the colleges. We know when students leave the high schools to go to PSEO, although it's a wonderful opportunity for them to start their college early. When they leave the high school, that high school, of course, loses that funding. And this keeps those high-achieving students in the high school. And that's one of the reasons why I think it's been so extremely successful, you know, within the small districts that we work with. You know, we've heard the girls talk about their 11 classmates. Actually, there's only 9 other ones, aren't there? 9 classmates are total 11 seniors. You could have each of those 11 seniors taking a different course, yes, all at the same time that Evansville High School could never, ever make available to them, you know, and still keep them in the high school setting. Another thing I think about being an educator myself, many times your dynamics in your classroom, are really affected by the group of students that you have in that class. You need the high-achieving students as well as the students that are struggling to really get those dynamics, and I think that that's maybe something the high schools maybe haven't even really realized how they've benefited by keeping young girls like this actually in the high school to help some of their other classmates and things in some of the other classes that they're taking that aren't college level. So I think that's one key piece that I think is just a real win-win for both the colleges as well as the high schools, you know, that are involved. And then just one other thing that I want to add. Originally, when I first went to the faculty with this program and explained the program, although they teach a lot of post-secondary students, the fact that these are exclusively two high school students that they're being taught, they kind of said, okay, we'll try it. Now, our 5 years later, they're fighting over these sections. They want these sections. These are students that, on a comparison basis, compared to the courses that are college students, that are just regular college students, the high school students are academically far exceeding what the college students are doing. So it's been just really amazing when you take this caliber of students and give them the opportunity, what they're able to do on their own. And also learn some students that maybe they would go to college when they might not otherwise thought they would have been a candidate to go to college. So we're hoping that that also is being accomplished.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Ms. Harrison? Okay, and we'll ask the students to rejoin us. And
thank you.
If they'd like to indicate what they're thinking about for their major and first career.
Good.
And it might be your ultimate career as well.
All right. Next year, as I said, I'm going to go to UMD, and I'll be going for elementary education. And I plan on getting a master's and getting a specialty in autism, so teaching in autism classrooms.
And I'm going
Thank you, Ms. Lundin. Yeah, Ms. Halstead.
Okay, I'm going to Bemidji State, and so far I plan on majoring in nursing. I'm really not sure, though. So, yeah.
Wonderful. Again, on behalf of the committee, a special thanks to the students for their testimony, to Mr. Turner for your leadership in putting this together. The questions that have been raised have helped as we process this. And for anyone else that would like to testify before we entertain a motion from Senator Stumpf?
Mr. Chair, ask a question? I was under the impression that Brandon-Evansville was a combined school. Is it just in athletics or?
Just in athletics.
Just athletics.
And
music programs.
Yes, choir.
But do you each have your own senior or your individual classes?
Individual classes.
Thank you.
Yep.
And one question, actually, that was emailed to me, I'll ask Mr. Turner. You're not a public institution. It's a private. And someone had asked about whether there's any intermingling regarding, you know, the what for public and private in terms of, you know, school philosophy and as it relates to online programs. I believe that's separate.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you asked. We are a public institution. It's Pine to Prairie. I'm school district number 985.
Okay. For Northwestern.
It's just Pine to Prairie Cooperative Center. We were organized under a joint powers agreement back in 1960. So it's okay. School district 985. And I work with 29 schools. And I have four other counterparts of mine down in the Fergus Falls area, the Bemidji area, and that. They'll coordinate 14 schools. Another one coordinates 24 schools. So there's a number of us around the region that coordinate, and I take care of the 29 schools to the northwest. So, and we're all public institutions.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that on the record. Any further questions, comments from members? If not, Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'd move that Senate file number 3064 be laid on the table and considered for inclusion in the omnibus education bill.
On Senator Stump's motion. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And to our testifiers as well.
Yeah, thanks. Mr. Chairman, I have one last bill.
Senate File 3063, Career and Tech Education Levy Formula.
He has an amendment. Mr. Chairman, there's an amendment.
We'll distribute that. And it's an author's amendment. Senator Stumpf moves that the author's amendment be approved. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman and members, the funding history of career and technical education has been kind of up and down over the years, and Senator Olson knows very well how that has gone, and to a large extent, it hasn't gone very well, but we've struggled to try to keep some resources there. And what I would like to do under this legislation would be to try to enhance some of those resources, realizing that we don't have a lot of aid, but that we do have the capacity to do some modest levy increase. And what we're suggesting under the amendment would be that, see if I can find it here, that the language reads that a district's career and technical levy shall not exceed 100% of its approved expenditures for career and technical programs for the fiscal year in which the levy is certified. Currently, the language reads that it would be the lesser of, and then there's as you look at the bill, there's several clauses, $80 times the district's average daily membership, et cetera, or 25%.
Senator Stumpf, we're going to ask Mr. Nauman to just further explain part of the amendment.
I'm sure Mr. Nauman.
So, Mr. Chair and members, I apologize.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say Mr. Nauman could do a much better job explaining it.
There's just a couple of things that work together. Mr. Chair and members, on line 1.9 of the base bill, you'll see the old formula was the lesser of these two calculations. So by definition, you would not get a circumstance where a school district would be allowed to levy beyond its costs because it's the lesser of one or the other. By changing it from the lesser to the greater, you could have a potential circumstance where a school district would be allowed to levy in excess of its costs. So the amendment ensures that that does not occur. That's the point of the amendment.
Thank you. Okay,
so, Senator Mr. Chairman and members, by voting for the amendment, you're actually voting to basically keep it within the expenditures.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
What is the interaction of the district's career and technical levy shall not exceed 100% of its approved expenditures, but on line 112 of the current statute, that 25% of approved expenditures in which the levy is done. That seems to be in conflict. Are you looking to increase the amount?
I could address that.
Or Eric, go ahead, Mr. Nauman. I believe it's not in conflict, but
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, I think the way to think about this is there's actually two calculations that are relevant here. There's the 25% calculation that you identified, but there's also lines 1.10 and 1.11, where a school district under current law can levy $80 times its ADMs in grades 10 through 12. So the potential does exist where charter school. I've been thinking a lot about charters lately. where a school district could generate a levy that's higher than its cost or higher than the 25% once you move it from a lesser than to a greater than calculation.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, I can see this could be helpful to larger schools. It might not be terribly helpful to smaller schools other than perhaps cooperatives. Maybe we could get some of the cooperative centers back in the business of doing some of these kinds of programs that an individual school can't afford to do. Maybe your testifiers will kind of confirm as to how this would work.
Right. Again, my name is Murray Turner, Director of Pine Prairie Cooperative Center, District 985. One of the things, you are correct, we are struggling in not only small schools, but in the large schools, we're struggling financially. You all know that. And any little bit helps. And I went through the 29 school districts that I work with. And again, this is a local levy, but it may help a school by increasing their levy by about 2,000 in my small schools, up to a couple of my larger schools that I work with. The levy could be increased up to about 30,000. So it is a small amount, but we're looking at any little bit helps. Deb Belfer, you might want to introduce yourself, and you might, from Bloomington, could address how it might affect the metro schools.
Welcome. Ms. Belfry.
I'm Debbie Belfry. I am the Career and Technical Education Director for the Bloomington Schools, and I'm also representing Minnesota Association of Career and Technical Administrators today. The levy does affect all schools because of the formula in a different way. One thing it is currently, what we're all struggling with, is keeping hold of our career and technical education programs to make sure that we're offering students choices and varieties and opportunities in their future. You heard of some of those defined. I do want to remind you that career and technical education programs, not all career and technical education programs are offered in all school districts. Career and technical education is the umbrella for agriculture education, health sciences occupations, business and marketing education, technology and education and engineering, industrial technology, family and consumer sciences, and work-based learning programs. And even in large districts, very few of us have the ability to be able to offer all of those program areas. So it does vary even in the suburban areas and in the urban areas as to what we offer, how we offer it. And this would allow us the opportunity to continue to offer those programs no matter what size district that we're in, and to support those program areas that we know are so critical to college and career readiness right now.
Senator Bana.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, one of the things that I'm wrestling with is we seem to have so many different things coming forward for potential levy targets. You know, I carried a bill for early childhood to at-risk four-year-olds. I have another bill, actually, that opens it up even broader that says all school districts can levy up to a certain amount. I'm wondering, what do you think in terms of, are we better off to, pick targeted spending areas like this one, which we think is important, or in times like this, if we have a levy target, which I still don't know what it might be, to have it undesignated and to allow school districts the flexibility? Or are you concerned if we did that then they wouldn't choose to
levy for this area, and then you wouldn't get the kind of focused attention on it.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonhoeff, I think it's the latter. History has kind of proven that I can't go back exactly what year it was, but the career and technical education has lost ground to the other kinds of programs for a number of reasons. One is that generally they're a higher cost because they're smaller in number. Usually you'll have programs that you just can't have, let's say, 30 in a classroom when you're working with, technology.
Welding or
whatever it might be. And so what has happened over the years is that many of those programs kind of disappeared out of our secondary systems and migrated into the technical college system, which is fine. I mean, if you live in Alexandria or close to a technical college, you can take advantage of that. But the problem is that leaves out all of those other areas where you don't have a technical college. And I think over the years, we've had many different approaches to teaching, the hands-on kinds of teaching. You know, I'm going to teach math, but it's going to be applied math, you know, where you could use it for carpentry or you could use it for some other job. Well, that hasn't really worked, and we've lost those opportunities along the way. And so you have this tug and pull of strictly going the academic route, and parents have been the greatest promoters of that disappearance, because we've kind of gone down the trail of every child has to go to a college, a four-year college, and get a four-year degree. And so if you look at India right now, India has a greater waiting list to get into their technical institutes than they do their universities. And the reason is that they know that the jobs in the future are going to be technical kinds of jobs. Those are the ones that are going to get jobs. They're going to make a good living off of those technical jobs. So what we need to do here in our country and in our state is to figure out how we can get these career kinds of programs back before our youth, our young men and women. And that's kind of the purpose of it. I believe that we have to figure out ways to keep the programs we have and expand the ones that we feel are going to be successful and needed in the future.
Thank you.
Senator Olson.
thank you, Senator Stump. That was beautiful. having spent a good chunk of my life in career and technical education and administration, it's been very difficult to see the demise. Minnesota was a leader at post-secondary and post-secondary for many, many years in the country. We are far from that now, and it has come from that pooling of resources, which we have managed to do at both the secondary and post-secondary level. And we need to stop the bleeding, and we need to be able to get, because we're finally discovering that people want to be a part of producing something, not just, you know, not just be a cog in a wheel, and that we do need to be able to make things and fix things. And that those are some of the core areas that we're losing, because they do require lab, the space, equipment, some of that kind of thing that is critical to it. And if we roll it into a pool, it's going to keep going down the. They'll never be able to hold their own against the push from the other philosophy. And so I appreciate that you have worked on finding a way to do this, because the only thing that we've been able to hang on to for a number of years is levying kind of the amount that you've had before. So it's a diminishing resource to try to keep anything going. This you are allowing for some growth, and I think modest, but it will open the door to being able to for districts that want to do this to be able to start down that path. And I think that I hope you'll all support it.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Yes, please continue with the testimony. Ms.
Mr. Chair. I have a definition, a brief definition, because there are a lot of definitions being submitted right now about what does it mean to be college and career ready. College today means much more than pursuing a four-year degree at a university. Being college ready means being prepared for any post-secondary education or training experience, including study at two-year and four-year institutions, leading to a post-secondary credential, including a certificate, a license, associate's degree, or a bachelor's degree. Being ready for college means that a high school graduate has knowledge and skills necessary to qualify for and succeed in entry-level, credit-bearing college courses without the need of remedial coursework. And what does it mean to be career-ready? In today's economy, a career is not just a job. A career provides a family, sustaining wage, and pathways to advancement, and requires post-secondary training or education. A job may be obtained with only a high school diploma, but offers no guarantee of advancement or mobility. Being ready for a career means that a high school graduate has the knowledge and skills needed to qualify for and succeed in the post-secondary job training and or education necessary for their chosen career. And I think that's where we're starting to see what Minnesota is working to do is to collaborate their secondary and post-secondary learning, the opportunities to create programs of study based on the national career 16 career clusters and 81 pathways. Minnesota is unique in the fact that we have the collaboration that we now do in secondary and post-secondary education to help students identify these pathways and earn college credit, as we just got done listening to a wonderful example of that. But then also to make sure that we're offering opportunities for that type of online learning in something called a hybrid course, where they have online learning, but they have to come together to be able to work to prove the skills that they're obtaining also by doing the hands-on portion of of a coursework. First responder in health science education is an example of that.
Excuse me, Ms. Belfry, the definitions that you just gave for college and career ready, could you give us a citation on that?
Yes, it's from the American Diploma Project Network. And if they were the shortest, most concise ones. There are a lot of definitions out there, and obviously quite a few additions to what those general definitions are.
But if you could leave that with us, mm-hmm. and as you know, the P20, it used to be the
right.
P16, the P20
exactly.
partnership, has a definition on college career ready. That coalition's
right.
now chaired by Commissioner Segrin, but it's very relevant right now as we're looking at college career expectations for the testing and assessment that is done for our students. And so when we're looking at definitions, making sure we're aligning with your
right.
expectations as well.
And the P16, now P20 initiative, obviously is one of those initiatives that's looking at the core assessment of knowledge in addition to the skill attainment that's necessary and needs to be proven through certification programs of the skill assessments that are now available nationally and are going to be required of all of our students. And so in that way, Minnesota is leading in their collaboration of making sure both of those things are accomplished. Career and technical education students obviously have to meet all the requirements under No Child Left Behind. But career and technical education program areas have been proven to help keep our students engaged. They contribute to the engagement of those students in high school, remaining in high school. They contribute to a higher attendance rate. They contribute to secondary completion rates and also moving on to post-secondary education, not just four-year institutions, but those two-year institutions also. CTE programs also provide, as many of you know, the opportunities for students to be engaged in student organizations where they develop leadership skills, employability skills by being involved in those leadership activities under skills, and I'll rattle off some terminology, but Skills USA, DECA and BPA, which are business and marketing student organizations, FCCLA, which is a family consumer science organization, FHA HERO, which is family consumer science in a variety of program areas, FFA, which is agriculture, HOSA, which is health science. And so all of those programs also are part of career and technical education and give students opportunities to gain those employability skills. Also in career and technical education in the state of Minnesota, all programs have to be approved every 5 years by the Department of Education for secondary schools, and they have to go through a rubric process to do a self-assessment and then approval by the Department of Education, including all of the things we've mentioned. And
Ms. Belfry, for our viewers, could you just give a highlight of the rubric assessment
of the program
process?
The program approval process is in statute in the Department of Education for career and technical education programs. As I said, we're on a five-year cycle within the state. Different parts of the state complete that every 5 years, so each year a different part of the state is part of that. Our teachers do a self-assessment. They also do an assessment. I just held a meeting in the southwest suburbs for family consumer science teachers, business teachers, and the ag teachers in that area. So they also had input from each other on their self-assessment and looking at best practice in all of the districts as they did their own assessments of their program areas. They also have to meet criteria and evaluate to show evidence that they partner with business and industry in their community. All career and technical education programs must involve business and industry in their programs. And, of course, we know that those advisory committees help define those skill attainment assessments that are in career and technical education, as well as making sure that we're relevant to what our students are being prepared for to go out into business and industry, specifically in the state of Minnesota, and that we have those opportunities for students to earn college credit in the high school, which includes, we've mentioned many of them today, AP, articulated credit, post-secondary options. And in the cases of many of our engineering programs now, the students can take those courses and either earn articulated credit or University of Minnesota transcripted credit in engineering courses. So all of that process helps make sure that we are rigorous, that we're relevant, that we have those pieces in place, and then those are looked at and approved by the Department of Education. We also link all teacher licensure in those program areas to that program approval process, and as I said, they can come back and say, we don't think that you've proven minimal standards, and in the long run, the self-assessment, the rubrics that all of the teachers participate in completing also move the teachers into staff development that's relevant and becomes part of their continuous improvement programs and processes within their own high schools. And so it's a way of also defining staff development for career and technical education teachers.
Thank you, Ms. Belfry. Questions of the testifiers? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address Senate File 3063?
Yes. I would just like to make one comment. It happened.
Mr. Turner.
It happened 2 weeks ago in one of my schools, Foss, and the ag teacher is retiring, and because of financial difficulties, they thought about dropping the agriculture program in that school. They had a community meeting, and I was invited to the community meeting, and I was so impressed by the number of community members that showed up for that meeting that thought that these programs are very beneficial in schools and that we need to keep them. And one of the students that is a senior this coming, he's a junior now, senior next year, is in the ag program. He talked about the importance of that program to his education. He said if it wasn't for the ag program and for Mr. Walling, his instructor, he would have dropped out of school. If they would let him, he would spend 6 hours a day in that shop. He's learned how to weld. He can tear apart small engines. It's provided a summer job for him. He already knows that he's going to Northland Community and Technical College for a welding career. And he is going to be a successful member of society. And he credits it to that ag program and the skills he learned there. Does he do so well on the academic side? No. In fact, the principal was kidding him. What they do is if he isn't up to date on his academics, he can't leave study hall and go to the ag shop. So anyway, that's forced him to keep up on his academics so he can get to the ag shop and work on projects and that. But and the community then overwhelmingly supported, we're going to keep the ag program in the school, and they're currently looking for an ag teacher. So that's just one story, and there's hundreds of those around the state. What those programs have done for a lot of our students.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Turner, but when he's there in that shop, he's using many of those academic principles and learning them even more in a way that he can understand and use. And oftentimes that performance is along with problem solving. And I'll bet you he's learned some parliamentary procedure along the way, yeah. too.
Yes, he has. If you're in an ag program, you know parliamentary procedure.
Absolutely. Yeah. In the cities, the city folks, they don't get exposed to some of these student organizations and have the experience of running meetings, and you can tell it. You can tell it when they try to run church business meetings and a few other things. They haven't got it. So hats off to our career and technical programs because they're learning a lot of things for life.
Are we ready to vote? Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'd move Senate File 3063 as amended be recommended be passed and laid on the table.
On that motion, further discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Sandra Stumpf, and testifiers. And our next bill, at least Senator Bach is here, Senate File 2405, School District Sparsity Revenue. Welcome, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Senator Wieger and committee. I'm here with a pretty big ask. This bill actually asks for some money in a pretty tough year, and I don't think many bills like that are getting heard, but let me just kind of explain to you the circumstances. We passed a provision last year that made relative to sparsity aid, and it made permanent a provision that allowed a school district to continue to receive sparsity aid even if they closed a school. And the closure would have caused them to lose their sparsity. So the intent of it was to try and create more efficiencies, allow school districts to be able to close some buildings, and it's a permanent provision now. But two school districts qualified as a result of the legislation that passed last year that did that. They were Deer River and Senator Saxog's district, and the St. Louis County School District, which is represented by myself, and Senator Tomasoni, I guess, are the two of us.
Yes.
There was a third school district we were unaware of at the time that didn't fit into the legislation, and it was up in Cook County. It was the Cook County School District. And they also closed a school, but they weren't named in the legislation last year. They closed the elementary school up at Grand Portage on the Indian Reservation. And there is a fiscal note attached to this bill. I don't actually have it in my bill file, and it's not that small. I want maybe council can tell me what it is, but it was $180,000 or something I thought I saw.
Dr. McQuay?
Mr. Chair and members, for fiscal year 2010, the cost is $86,000, and then in 2011, $138,000, and then in 12 and 13, $118,000.
So I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I didn't have that with me. I know I had seen it earlier when I introduced the bill, and it spends $86,000 in 10, and I argue that. I understand there's no money to spend, but let me just make this plea to the committee. Cook County is one of the districts in the state that does not have a voter-approved levy. They've tried multiple times to get one. The government owns 91% of the land in their school district. Of what's left to tax, about 65% is seasonal rec, it's cabins. They have very little to tax. I mean, the opportunity for them to ever get a voter-approved levy are very slim. So $86,000 to them is, when you don't have a voter-approved levy, in a small school is a lot of money. It'll keep an extra teacher working.
Senator Bonnet.
So That's my request, Mr. Chairman. I realize it's difficult to accomplish. I wish it had been included in the language last year when we did this and made this provision permanent, but they didn't meet that 60-day provision, and we weren't aware of them, or we would have included them last year, and I guess they probably wouldn't have had it. I wouldn't be here with a fiscal note today.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, did you know that Senator Stumpf also had the same situation that he presented today with regard to the Lancaster School District?
No, Senator Bonham, I wasn't aware of that, but I'm pleased to hear that, though.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, it seems to me that there's something off about if we have to name each one of them individually. I think this is a concern because we want school districts to close buildings. That makes sense, and then it doesn't seem appropriate that they fall then outside of the sparsity. I understand all of it. Is there some other way to approach it so we aren't naming school districts in law? Doesn't seem like that's a very good process to use.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, I think we can ask counsel, but I think the provision's permanent now. I think these were just some outliers. It was a result of what happened last year, but
I'd need
some advice on that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, I guess you may want to educate me on what you're thinking about with respect to last year. What the difference between Senator Stumpf's bill... let me speak to this first. The difference between Senator Stumpf's bill and this bill is that this bill goes into the sparsity formula and makes a permanent adjustment to the sparsity formula. Senator Stumpf's bill dealt with the same issue, but what we've done when we make changes to K-12 formulas, most notably back in the 2003 timeframe, we created the transition revenue program, and school districts, and there's a calculation made for districts to fall in or out of that transition revenue program. It's traditionally been sort of a catch-all for districts that end up with a deleterious effect associated with a formula change. And so his bill goes into that formula and names them for the purposes of the deleterious effect that he felt was important to remediate. This goes directly into the sparsity formula, and there's a difference between those two approaches.
Sarah Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nauman, in terms of an ongoing policy, can you speak to what makes sense in terms of the way we draft our legislation and how the policy was done?
In many respects, Senator Bonoff, that's a policy decision for legislators to work through. I think you have to decide whether or not you think that the sparsity formula is something that is a formula that should continue if the factors that generate that formula change, versus perhaps maybe adding into the transition program or some other approach. Dr. McQuay has handed me some language that did indeed make an adjustment to sparsity for the St. Louis County School District that was closing, but we didn't do it in session law. We didn't do it actually in the sparsity formula permanently. So there's a policy choice for members to think through there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, either way, I hear you. I'm sympathetic, and I think we ought to do something to fix it. I'm just exploring what's the best approach.
Well, Senator Bonoff, I think that's... I think that's kind of the point, I guess, is we want school districts to be able to find more efficient ways to consolidate buildings and not have there be a negative economic impact of it from funding from the state, I guess. We should be encouraging that kind of facility consolidation, not penalizing. So I think it's the right discussion for this committee to have.
Senator Bach, I know there's a great deal of shared services that are going on right now up there, the county, the city, the various entities that are working with the school district to do everything they can to address greater efficiency in government. So that's just noted for the record, and having a disincentive to do that works against that. So it's a need that needs to be further considered, I believe. Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think I appreciate the fact that there are a couple of options on the table as we start putting the bill together and know what we have to work with. Senator Bach has proposed the more generic one, trying to put the frame reference around the kind of districts that fall into this trap and the disincentives for the very things that we want to accomplish, or to essentially go through the naming of school districts when it happens. So I appreciate it, and I'd be willing to move that this bill be put on the table for consideration in the omnibus bill.
Okay, on Senator Olson's motion, and let's clear the intent, I think, to Senator Bach and others. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address us before we take action? Including remarks, Senator Bach, before we vote?
No, I think this is the only bill I've offered that actually spends money this year. In fact, I've even refused to co-author ones that spend money because of what we all know are the budget circumstances. So I realize this is very difficult. I just want to ask on a part of a very, very rural school district that it's not going to have the opportunity to do a voter-approved levy, that $80,000 to them will keep a teacher employed. So I appreciate your consideration. And I know how hard, if it can't be done, I understand that. I understand how difficult it is right now.
Well, thanks for
thank you
sharing that concern. And Senator Olson renews her motion. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Bach.
Thank you.
Our next meeting is tomorrow at 8 a.m., and we have four items, Senator Bonoff on shared services, Senator Rummel, community-centered school pilot project, Senator Torres-Ray, special ed third-party billing, and Senate File 3000, Senator Saltzman on state aid payments for chartered schools. And, of course, that could change as well. Also, on behalf of the committee, we'd like to wish a happy birthday to our legislative assistant to the committee, Jerry Wenzel. Happy birthday to you. Happy 39. There'll be no further business. The committee's adjourned. Thank you.
We're back in here.
You know, oh, you
keep your seatbelt on there.